From SDPB Radio, I'm Josh Heyer, and you're listening to an In the Moment news special. Since the first case of COVID-19 was discovered in South Dakota, the In the Moment team has been bringing you extra podcasts that focus on the developments throughout the state. And we continue that today. Wednesday, March 24th, In the Moment host Lori Walsh was joined by Congressman Dusty Johnson to discuss what's been going on in Washington, D.C., and the measures they're trying to implement.
Congressman Johnson, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, you bet, Lori, of course.
All right. Tell us an update on how those negotiations are going today.
Well, I think we've gotten back on track. The vote on Sunday night was a setback, as was the one on Monday. We had a pretty good run of bipartisan cooperation, and I know Congress is not known for that, but in the previous 2 weeks, we had voted through a couple of really important COVID-19 response packages on, you know, big bipartisan votes. This third package, which, as you mentioned, is largely an economic stimulus package, we're going to get it done this week. Again, it's going to be strongly bipartisan. It's going to be focused a lot on families and on small businesses. I expect the Senate's going to approve it today. I hope they are. And then obviously the ball is going to be in the House's court.
We've also heard about a House package from Nancy Pelosi. Your thoughts on that going forward and how those two will get reconciled?
Yeah, I don't know that anybody in D.C. really thinks that the Pelosi bill is going anywhere. And I think the Speaker would admit that, you know, her bill is not going to get enacted into law. Everybody looks for leverage at these times. That's one of the most disappointing parts about D.C. in my mind. It just operates so differently than peer does. But I think the Speaker wanted to make sure that she had a seat at the table. I think she felt that having her own bill as a counterweight, as a countermeasure to the Senate's bill, would maybe give her a little more leverage. I don't know that it's worked out that way, but I do know that I expect they're going to have a legitimate deal and a vote later today. And certainly it's going to be strongly bipartisan. The Senate and the House are going to come together and get this done.
So you're planning on voting against the House bill, do you think? I mean, maybe you haven't decided yet.
Well, the Pelosi bill will never have a vote. You know, what's going to happen is that, the Senate bill, we continue to call it the Senate bill. It's not the Senate bill. I mean, the House has been involved in negotiations all along the way, both Republican leaders and Democrat leaders. I know that I've been involved in negotiations. On Friday, I had 14 different meetings related to this economic stimulus package. And so when the Senate votes today, as I hope they do, then that'll go over to the House. And the House is not going to tinker with it, because at that point, we need to get our act together. I mean, our act will have been together. We will have done the Senate package together. The House will approve it on strongly bipartisan basis, and the president will sign it the next day. That's what I think is going to happen. The Pelosi bill will never get a vote.
We're hearing the Pelosi bill has things about the Green New Deal and other things that are not related to coronavirus. We're hearing that what many people are calling the Senate deal has education for abstinence programs and other things that are not related to coronavirus. That doesn't seem like a hard thing to eliminate, to focus on the task at hand. Why is that true? Do people just keep throwing in these sort of things that are unrelated? And how do you stop that?
Well, I do think the Pelosi bill has a number of unrelated provisions, and I think the Speaker has done that because she wants leverage, right? If she can show, I mean, if she's asking for, you know, 100 things, she's more likely to get 20. Than if she only asks for 20 things. So I think it's a bargaining approach on her part. I don't love what she's done there, but she's certainly not the first one to use these tactics. That is not really the case with the McConnell bill. The McConnell bill is the McConnell bill. I mean, it has been drafted with Democrats and Republicans at the table the entire time. There were task forces put together. Democratic leader Schumer appointed people to those task forces, as did McConnell. They worked together on language, and that's why you're going to see, with just a few tweaks, that bipartisan Senate bill will be passed with overwhelming numbers in both the Senate and the House. I know a lot of people, for political reasons, have attempted to demonize it, but I think you're going to see that people on both sides of the aisle are going to embrace that bill once it passes.
Does it have things like funding for abstinence education in it that you've seen?
No. I don't know that. I mean, I have heard that. I have seen no evidence of that. I mean, I have reviewed the legislation. You know, obviously there are lots of different versions because things change over time, but I have not seen that. What I have seen is really robust funding, tax rebate checks to American families. I have seen forgivable loans for small businesses. I have seen loans to larger businesses. People keep talking about free money and bailouts to large industries. You know, I understand why people are interested in demonizing, legislation, but right. You know, those components simply aren't in the bill.
So let's talk about what this bill does. If it does pass, as you're predicting that it will in a bipartisan fashion, all right, what's coming, South Dakotans? What do you want them to anticipate here?
Well, there's going to be robust investment on the healthcare side. There's going to be robust investment in unemployment insurance for people who aren't able to get back to work. But the rest of the and that stuff is important. But I mean, I focus on the rest of the package because the rest of the package is really focused on making sure we get people back to work, or even more importantly, that they never lose their jobs in the first place. One of the most devastating impacts of the 2008 and 2009 recession was that so many people lost their jobs, Lori. And it was not a 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 year problem. It took us a decade to build back up that labor force. To the extent we can stop those job losses, I mean, 200,000 people lost their jobs yesterday. We have got to stop that. And if we can do that, then there isn't any reason that the economy can't rebound relatively quickly. If we can stop the job losses, then I believe that before the end of the year, we're going to be back in economic expansion mode. Second quarter is going to be difficult. Third quarter may be difficult, but the fundamentals of the economy are still strong. So how do we do that? You know, to answer your question, the first will be $1,200 payments in the next few weeks to American adults, $500 payments for children. Those would be income tested, so the checks would get smaller as your income goes up. And that is going to allow people who can't get to work to do things like pay the rent and pay their utilities. It's going to draw down the number of loan defaults, which we want. We don't want people who have done nothing wrong to have their credit destroyed for the next 7 years because of an infectious disease. Then for small businesses, it's critically important that we give small businesses the liquidity they need, the cash they need to pay their bills during this valley of the shadow of death. And so there will be forgivable loans. I would expect that the SBA will work with community vendors. So with small businesses, we'll be able to go to the banker that they've used for years, be able to get 8 weeks of operating capital. And if, and this is critically important, Lori, if that company keeps their payroll expense up, if they bring their people back to work, or if they keep their people on work, if they keep that payroll expense up, then large portions of that loan will be forgivable. That is going to really help make sure that we don't have job losses more than we have to in this country. And then just two more things. I know I'm rambling on, but I would say for large industries, there won't be that kind of forgivable loan. For large industries, there would be an opportunity to access some loans, but there'll be things they have to pay back. And then finally, for ag producers who are really in a bad spot right now, we have been fighting, and we have been successful in gaining inclusion of dollars to, in essence, have a third round of the market facilitation payments, the NMFP payments you and I have spoken about before. The last 2 years, it's been because of China disruption. This year, it would be because of COVID-19.
You mentioned, President Trump mentioned in his press conference yesterday that the cure can't be worse than the disease, and you can see some antsiness to get America back to work. He said America wasn't designed to be shut down. You're talking about, you know, those small businesses, you know, keeping their payroll going and things like that. Talk a little bit about balancing public health with economic health, and how do you feel personally that the social distancing and the isolation and the closing of businesses and the drastic measures that we're taking, is it working? Do we need to keep doing it? Because there is some confusion in South Dakota about whether or not those efforts are worthwhile.
Well, I think you have to be guided by data. And I'm glad you used the word balancing, because clearly that's a part of it, right? I mean, we know that we want to be guided by good evidence and good data, and we want to hear from a lot of different worldviews and technical expertises when making these decisions. But we do need to do social distancing. I believe that it is working. I believe that we are flattening the curve. I do believe that that will mean worldwide, you know, hundreds of thousands and maybe millions of people who are not going to end up in the hospital, who will not die, who otherwise might have had we treated this threat more cavalierly. And I know this is difficult. I mean, today is my middle son's, you know, 12th birthday. Of course, he wants to be at school with his friends. Of course, he wants to have a big birthday party. He's a very social kid, and he will never get this birthday back. But I know, and he knows, even at his young age, he knows that you cannot disregard good science and good public health because it is an inconvenience to you. And I believe that if we continue this initial 15-day period, if we continue to have good compliance, that we are going to make the weeks after that less onerous. Not that we'll be able to, you know, lift up all of, I mean, not that we're going to be able to get back to business as usual. We're a long ways away from that. But every 15-day period where we can be focused and driven by good practices and CDC recommendations, that will make the next 15-day period easier on us. And that's what we need to focus on.
How are you practicing these techniques in your life as you do the work in Washington? Certainly, we've heard about others in the Senate and the House who are not taking the measures that the rest of us are being told to take.
Yeah, I have four good friends who are COVID-19 positive. Two of them are South Dakotans, and two of them are members of Congress. The members of Congress, Ben McAdams, a Democrat from Utah, and Mario Diaz-Balart, a Republican from Florida. They're some of my favorites. I mean, they are just outstanding public servants. They are optimistic people who care about this country. And it was really hard to hear about Ben going into the hospital because he got so sick. We're going to be practicing. I mean, we're going to be following the CDC's recommendations. We're not going to have 435 of us on the floor at one time. When it comes time to vote for the Senate bill that is going to provide real assistance to Americans, we're going to stagger voting. We're going to wipe down the voting machines after every group of members comes in. We're going to do what we can to make sure that we keep our members and their families healthy.
In the McConnell bill, you mentioned, or the Senate bill, as some people are calling it, this pending stimulus package, which you're predicting will get bipartisan support. You mentioned healthcare, you know, investments. And I guess this is my last question before I let you go get back to work, because I know you have a town hall tonight as well. Is that money to healthcare facilities, does it get to South Dakota in time for our anticipated surge here? Governor Noem has voiced some frustrations with being forgotten out here on the ground. She said in her press conference today, politics as usual, she's been frustrated with from Washington. What's your message to people from South Dakota who are saying, you know, when those numbers start coming in and their local hospitals are being overwhelmed, is there going to be money to increase their capacity in time?
Yeah, I would tell you, I don't think the healthcare systems and the independent hospitals and the providers, I don't think they're waiting around for the big check from Washington. I think they are, you know, they have not been overrun or exhausted with COVID-19 response yet, but they are preparing to do the very best job. And so they've ordered ventilators and they've ordered personal protective equipment and they are getting ready. I think they understand that those bills will come due and they're going to need to be able to pay their bills and that the federal government will be a substantial help to that. But they, I think, would tell you that their preparation has not been slowed because they've been penny wise and pound foolish. And so when we pass that bill, I think it's going to send a strong message to them that when you've got, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars that are going to be invested in this response, that, of course, Congress needs to do everything it can to make sure that money hits the street quickly. But I don't think the hospitals are just waiting around for the check.
Have they been slowed by lack of supplies and inability to get things?
Yeah, I clearly think that, you know, supply chains have been strained And I think that is less about federal funding and more about, because, you know, we passed, you know, $1 billion, you know, funding package, you know, 2 weeks ago, you know, to states, tribes, and localities. You know, the reality is, you know, money can't buy something that doesn't exist. And clearly it has taken manufacturers a couple of weeks, a couple of months to get up to speed. I think we're making real headway. I mean, I have a friend, in fact, he's a member of Congress, who has a whiskey distillery that he's converted to making hand sanitizer. Mm-hmm. And I know ethanol plants have made conversions. I have friends who are in manufacturing who have converted to making ventilators and to making masks. And so we are seeing the market respond. And it's frustrating that it doesn't show up overnight. But I think it also, like so many things with COVID-19, it reminds us to be thankful of, you know, the incredible efforts that people are making to have this be something that we can survive and ultimately come out of together.
Beetle County is being called the epicenter of COVID-19 in South Dakota. Beetle County currently has more cases than any other county in South Dakota, despite having a much smaller population than some of the others. So we invited on a couple folks from Huron, the largest city in Beetle, to give us an idea of what's going on.
My guests are the mayor of Huron, Paul Aylward. Mayor, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, and thanks for having us this morning.
We also have Huron School District Superintendent Terry Nebelsick. Welcome to you as well.
Good morning, Lori.
And Officer.
Good morning, Lori.
And Officer Mark Johnson is also with us. Welcome.
Good morning.
Mayor, I'm going to start with you. We're showing 12 confirmed cases in Beetle County. Tell us a little bit about what you are seeing already with people getting sick in the county. What do you know that maybe isn't reflected in the numbers?
Well, I think that probably we have not reached our maximum numbers yet. We are not having a lot of testing done yet, and I believe that the more testing that is done, probably the number of confirmed cases will rise.
Are you have tests available? How is testing going? Is it fairly smooth, or have you had hiccups with getting people who wanted or needed tested?
I think we're ramping up with that. We have some private laboratories now that are doing testing for us, and also the state testing. We are supposed to get our test collection kits through the Department of Health from the state of South Dakota. So we're waiting for those, and then we will probably go live with our own collection site here in Huron, hopefully yet this week.
All right. And Mayor, we understand that you issued a citywide emergency ordinance, working together with other city leaders. Tell us a little bit about what went behind that decision.
Well, we were contacted by the governor, and she told us that we had 4 more confirmed cases on Sunday. And we decided to call an emergency meeting, a co-meeting with Beetle County Commission and our Huron City Commission. And so Sunday afternoon, we spent about 3 or 4 hours discussing our problems and what's happening here in Huron. We discussed many different options of what action we could take. And finally, at the end of the day, we drafted a resolution and an ordinance that would basically close down our bars and restaurants and put some constraints on the number of people who can gather, kind of what the basic, what is happening around our state and nation. And we put those together in an ordinance and a resolution. And we voted separately. The county voted and the city voted separately. But we did pass basically the same resolution and the same ordinance the entire county.
Mayor, we heard Governor Kristi Noem talking yesterday and issuing an executive order with what cities should do. What do you make of that executive order as far as, you know, who is in charge of making some of these decisions?
Well, the governor has stated publicly that she believes it's the mayors and the commissions that will need to take action. She has put out those guidelines as a guideline. And we basically followed that guideline, even though we had done it before she put out the guideline. That was basically what we followed.
Do you feel like that's her responsibility, yours? Are you getting the support that you need from the state at this time to make those decisions?
Well, I was glad that she did put out an advisory anyway to back up the actions that we did. I would have liked to seen it, and I told her that I thought it would have more force if it came from the governor and included the entire state. But she has different views on that. So we went ahead and we thought that it was necessary to protect the citizens of Huron and do everything that we could do. We know it's going to be a hardship on some people, and we know that this is not easy. But we thought this was such a serious condition that's coming through to us of the coronavirus that we had to take action.
Mark Johnson, I want to bring you into the conversation next and talk a little bit, if you will, if you're the right person to answer this question. In Huron, getting word out to people, who might not have internet connection, who might not have the same television services, who might not speak English. There are many different languages spoken in Huron. Tell me a little bit about the education challenges and opportunities here to make sure people understand what's happening and take appropriate actions when they may live in very different circumstances.
We're working very hard with our community partners with that. Is the ordinance is being translated into Karim and Spanish. We're trying to get the word out over all aspects of the social media and the mainstream media with our local newspapers, our local radio stations, and then we're trying to use social media quite extensively. I know there are some restraints as far as with the internet. That's why we're trying to cover all of our bases that we can, so we can get the message out to the most of as many people as we can.
Have you seen amongst first responders, anecdotally, what are they saying about the availability of protective equipment for some of those first responders, for example, as people might get sick, and the availability of healthcare services in the city?
As we sit on the first responder side right now, we are sitting fairly well with our personal protective equipment. We are working to get more of those resources available if we end up with a surge event. Right now, everything is all right with the supplies that we have, but that is a concern that our city department heads are working on to make sure if we do end up with a surge event that we have those resources available.
And I also want to talk with Superintendent Terry Nebelsick here. And, another challenge, you've got kids out of school, kids who, again, speak different languages, live in different home life environments. How are you sort of meeting some of those challenges right now?
Well, first of all, most of our kids are far enough along in their language development that they can communicate with their teachers. We only teach in English, and then kids adapt to that as we intensify their English learning. So only the few that have come in the last little bit would be a challenge there. The parents, it's a different situation, just like when our country was founded. Grandparents know very limited English, and parents are trying to learn while their children learn. And so we are trying to use our liaisons who know that community in order to make sure that the information gets to our bilingual people who can process it and get that information out. It's much more simple when I was just calling a one day off because I'd make a phone call and it would go out in three different languages. But with the complexities of this, I post the information on Facebook. I get it to the entire staff. Obviously, I write it in English, and then they try to make sure that liaisons are hearing that information so that they can get to their communities.
Do you feel, Superintendent, as if this is a superintendent responsibility, you know, a school district responsibility to figure out how to continue learning into the future through online? You know, are teachers having to kind of reinvent their own wheels? Is there guidance from the state? How do you move forward into getting education to kids when really no one's ever had to do this before at this level?
I'll try to make a concise answer to that, but yes, it's my responsibility as a longtime member of the community and as the education leader. Yes, it's our leadership team's responsibility, but we got to make sure that what we really talk about is where the rubber hits the road, and that's these fantastic teachers. And teachers have been modernizing their delivery for years and years, and this is really allowing the public to see the innovative nature of our teaching staffs. Every building is now developed a website where anyone who has internet access can go to the website for their building and pull up the educational resources, which will support the packets that are going home. Our 9-12 grades are all digital, and those classes are continuing in many formats, from Zoom to lecture series to videos that go out, video streamed, et cetera. And so I think that we'll be way better 2 weeks from now than we are now, and we are way better than we were a week ago when we started. But it's also a recognition that these fantastic teachers have not been waiting until this emergency to integrate technology. And as we all know, our kids are ahead of the game on technology, so kids will learn.
In a few minutes, we're going to take listeners live to Pierre for the governor's update. She's having a press conference. So we expect Secretary of Health for the state of South Dakota, Kim Mulsom-Reisden, to also be with Governor Kristi Noem. As we await that, I want to go back to the Mayor Aylward, and we're talking, if you're just tuning in, to leadership from the city of Huron, which is centered in Beadle County, or which is in Beadle County, I should say. And Mayor, tell me a little bit about just, you know, it's an incredibly stressful time. And these, in a town like Huron, you know your neighbors, you know where you do business, you know who owns that business. How are people pulling together? What kind of stories are you hearing?
Well, fortunately, the response that I've had from people in our community has been very positive about the actions that we've taken so far. It is a hardship. I think everyone understands it's a hardship. And I believe that the majority of our people now are taking very seriously this disease that is spreading through our state, and know that the actions we're taking are in order not to hurt people, but to save people's lives. I would like to add one other thing. There evidently is a rumor going around being spread in our state that our immigrant population, which we have a large number of immigrants that live in Beadle County, are the cause of the spread of this virus. And talking to the Department of Health, South Dakota Department of Health, this rumor is completely untrue. There are no known cases of infection of that virus in our immigrant community at all. So I'd just like to dispel that rumor and hope that that is the end of the rumor.
Well said. Mark Johnson, do you want to add to this idea of, and I'm just going to hopefully, I won't have to interrupt you, but we are waiting for the governor's press conference, so we may do that abruptly here in a moment. But until then, Mark, some of those stories that you're hearing about people reaching out to one another in Huron that give you hope that whatever's down the road for the state of South Dakota and the city of Huron, you know, individually and collectively, that this is a community that knows how to get through difficult times.
It is. And Superintendent Nebelsick could vouch for that as well. When it comes to yesterday, they delivered meals. There's individuals that stepped forward to make sure that the meals were delivered to the kids that were out of school. There's a lot of business leaders that are working together to make sure that they can provide the services that they can, with essentially not having public walk into their doors. I know Greater Huron Development and the Chamber have been working hard with their business owners and the public in general. If somebody needs something, they're stepping up and helping each other out while maintaining their social distance and following the CDC guidelines. And it, unfortunately, you think about it, a winter storm, everybody comes together, helps each other out. Now we're just in the same type of situation that could last, we're not even for sure how long. And everybody's been in good spirits and helping everybody out right now.
South Dakota's travel agency has certainly been hit hard since the first case of COVID-19 in South Dakota was reported. We invited on Jim Hagen, Secretary of South Dakota's Department of Tourism, to join us for a look at the impact of COVID-19 on the travel and arts industry.
Jim Hagen, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon, Lori. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you? Healthy?
Yeah, we're healthy, and that's a blessing. But yeah, things are. It's been a tough 10 days for this entire world, our country, and our state. No question.
Let's talk about that early financial impact. What are we seeing happening already, and how far out can we predict the impact?
Yeah, boy, it's tough. In fact, just this morning, I've been on the phone or emailing back and forth with about a half dozen industry members. And throughout the last couple of days, I've had contact with dozens every day. It's really tough out there in the tourism industry. I just was on the emailing back and forth with a hotelier this morning, and he's had to let go almost all of his staff this morning. He's never had to do something like that before. And it's really, really tough. Nationwide, same thing. We're not alone. I mean, every state, every city is facing these same challenges. And so, and we're taking it day by day. The one thing, as you just alluded to, is we know we're going to get through this crisis at some point. When we look back at past pandemics like swine flu, H1N1, there was a huge pent-up demand for travel once we got through that pandemic and that crisis. And we're seeing the same thing here, too. It's just having to deal with the immediate and not knowing how long that immediate is going to last. But we are planning for the future. We can't forget about that. But dealing with the today is tough.
Tell me how the state has shifted its messaging as far as really promoting travel in South Dakota.
Yeah, that's such a great question. So we early on, right away, as this crisis was hitting, we work with a number of partners who are out surveying constantly on a daily basis, really trying to assess the sentiment of travelers throughout the country. And we've been doing the same. And so we're seeing that sentiment shift. It's like it's shifting every day, actually. People at first, there was some sort of a bit of a pause. People were still searching, still looking, planning for the future. Now, we have seen that shift just in the last week, the week of March 11th, nationally, when consumers were asked, about not quite 30% who were responding to survey said, we're going to cancel our trip completely. Now, when that same survey was done on March 19th, nearly 50% of Americans who were surveyed said they're going to cancel. And so what we've been doing with our messaging is just being really careful about what we say. We're still marketing. We've pulled back on some platforms like television and others. But with digital marketing, technology allows us today and intelligence allows us to find those audiences who are very receptive to still planning despite the crisis we're going on. So the message that they're seeing about South Dakota is one that's very lofty. It's very inspirational. We're just showing beautiful pictures of our pristine outdoors, our beautiful Black Hills National Forest, the beautiful Black Hills, the rolling prairies on the eastern half of the state, our glacial lakes, beautiful glacial lakes up in the northeast corner. We're not pushing any sort of message like book now, come here. We're just simply being very, if they want to request a vacation guide, they can get that. But we're just being very lofty and not pushing any sort of a call to action at this point in time. We'll continue monitoring things very closely because the last thing we want to do is to do anything that would appear that we're insensitive to the crisis that we're facing. Other things that we're doing is we're making sure that any of our digital marketing that does run, that it's not being placed near an article or anything about COVID-19. So there are just little things that you can do. People, we do have a segment of the population, like I said, that are still planning and looking to the future. And so we want to be there when they're searching, but encouraging them to, they can daydream about us today. And then down the road, when we get through this, we'll be so happy to welcome them to South Dakota.
We are hearing reports, unconfirmed reports, about many people still coming from some of those cities because they feel like this is a safe place to be. Gambling is up in Deadwood. Hill City, people are saying hotels are having problems, restaurants are having problems. Are you hearing any of those reports that people from elsewhere are coming here specifically because they like the lofty message and they think it helps them escape from a city or an urban area, for example? Is there any truth to that?
Well, I think there's no question that we've received feedback from visitors around the country who've said to us, we're planning long term. We were planning to go to X, Y, or Z. In fact, I just got an email last week from a couple in Illinois who said we were going to take a cruise. We've decided not to do that. When the time is right, we're going to come to South Dakota. And so can you send us a vacation guide? I mean, we are hearing reports of out-of-state visitors in and coming to our state. And my message would be, we're flattered that they're here, that they find us to be a safe destination, and we are. And we have these pristine outdoors, which we do, clean air, clean water, those sort of things. But we're really encouraging people, let's get through this crisis. The smart thing to do is to stay home. Come and see us later. When we get through this, we want you to come to South Dakota, no question about it. But we all have a responsibility now to do what we can to make sure that we're preventing the spread of this virus, that we're flattening the curve, that term that we've heard so much now in the last 10 days. And so it's tough because, there is a concern from a lot of industry members, too. Like we're not wanting to see these visitors right now just because we need to get a handle on this.
So I'm reading in the Rapid City Journal an open letter through the Deadwood Chamber of Commerce from the mayor of Deadwood asking casino operators to please shut down to help curb the potential spread in a town like Deadwood. Is the Department of Tourism messaging conflicting with this plea from local destinations to say, we can't handle these people right now. We're bringing this into our state in a travel-related way, and it could tie in with our messaging itself.
Right. No. In fact, our messaging is very much tied to the future. When we get through this crisis, then come and see us. And that's what we're going to do. Like I said, none of our calls to action are come see us today, come see us next week, come see us in a month. It's down the road. When we want to see them. So, we're being very careful to make sure that our messaging is one that daydream about us today. That's fine, but you come when we're through this.
Do you think you made that pivot soon enough?
Yeah, I do. Yep, we were very careful when this was coming down. We pivoted right away with our marketing.
When was that? Yeah,
would have been 10 days, right when we got into the crisis. 10 days ago about 2 weeks ago.
Sure. What is your message for South Dakotans then, going forward? Because many of them want to go to places in the state that they feel are wide open and would have the appropriate distance between themselves and other people. How do you sort of, sort through that for people who need a little breather, but want to stop the spread here in the state?
For sure. My message would be, and I think Game Fish and Parks have the same message, is, if you want to get outdoors, get outdoors, but let's be smart about it, because everyone, needs to get out and get that fresh air and get a little bit of exercise. But just be careful about, huge crowds, and that's what we want to avoid. So I can certainly understand the need and the want to get outside and just clear one's head and get some fresh air. But we have to be really smart about that, too. If you're out and about and you're the only ones walking on a trail, that's great. But if there are a lot of folks, that's not good. And so, again, we just have to be wise about what we're doing.
How does this all change the conversation about fireworks at Mount Rushmore this year?
You know, for now, there are a lot of moving parts with that, but we're going to be very sensitive to how things may change and where we're at. As we know, things can change by the day, and they're certainly changing by the week. So we continue to lay the groundwork, but also know that if we need to pivot, we'll pivot. So no decisions have been made, but we're continuing on with planning we need to be, because, like I said, there's a lot of moving parts, but I know that we'll be very sensitive and we'll pivot if we have to.
Are there investments involved in that planning? Do you have to make at some point financial decisions that?
Sure, there will. Yeah, sure. For now, it's, you know, we're just putting in our time, and we have been for months with working groups from the National Park Service, Department of the Interior, and at the state level. We're not at a point where we've had to expend any resources in terms of purchasing fireworks or things like that. But those are decisions we'll have to make for sure in the weeks ahead.
And the governor said, May 1st is, you know, the deadline keeps moving forward to May 1st. It seems like by July, it's hard to imagine that we'll be in a situation where we want a massive gathering like that. At what point do you make that final call? The Olympics are on hold.
Yes, I saw that. So I don't have a good answer for you today, but we certainly will take that into consideration. And we're already discussing it internally with my team, and as we meet as a planning group with our other partners, we'll be having those discussions too. And I know that at the federal level, I'm sure they're having those discussions too. So I would just say stay tuned. Don't have a good answer for you today, but as things evolve, we'll definitely be in touch on that.
Now, as the economic impact of coronavirus continues to wash through South Dakota, financial management has become fraught with emotion in new ways. For many, what they thought about financial security needs to be re-examined. Rick Kaler is a frequent guest on In the Moment. He's a wealth advisor and pioneer in financial therapy, and he's the founder of Rick Kaler Financial Group in Rapid City. He joined In the Moment host Lori Walsh to give a little advice.
Welcome back, Rick Kaler. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Lori. It's always good to be with you.
Talk to me a little bit about decision-making at this time, because you've been thinking about that as well, with just the huge volume of changes that are coming and the things that need to be done, kind of, you know, compiling on top of what a lot of people are experiencing, which is they can't work. They can't. There's a million things that you can't do anymore added to a million things that you can do. It's a huge time of transition and upheaval. Let's go through some tips that might help people clarify the decision-making process or the thought process here in the days
absolutely.
Ahead.
We can become so overwhelmed and, like I said, numb. We can become frozen, just overwhelmed in a transition. We're actually in, there's four typical transitions. You got the anticipation of the transition, the ending, the passage, and then the new normal. So we've been thrust into ending very, very quickly. So there's one thing that can be done that we use both in our practice with people and that anybody can do is to just give yourself a timeout, because usually there's so much to be done. And list, get out of your head everything you're concerned about, everything that needs to be done, all of the worries. And once that's out on a piece of paper, you can, of course, put it onto an Excel sheet or Word, go through the list and label each thing with one of three ways. This is something that must be done now. And if it's an abstract worry, break it down into actions. What can I do? What can I do around this worry? And when you have the actions, it's either something that needs to be done now, something that needs to be done soon, or something that can be done later. Mm-hmm. So label them all, now, soon, and later. And I cannot tell you how much relief this can bring to folks in this stage of overwhelm and helplessness. And then you concentrate just on the now tasks. And when those are done, your soon tasks move up to become now. And this can bring some relief and some clarity and some order. Like yesterday, one of my now tasks was find toilet paper.
Sure. It returns.
Who would have ever thought?
For everybody in Rapid City who's having the toilet paper conversation right now, Sioux Falls went through this, and the supply chain gets restocked, and pretty soon there's enormous piles of toilet paper in your store. It's generic toilet paper, but you'll get it. So that's, you can sort of see the waves. Yeah, each. Now, what has to be done with it now? Here's a journaling technique that I've used from Kathleen Adams, who wrote Journal to the Self, and she has the list of 100. And you just sit down, label a piece of paper 1 to 100, and list everything that you are worried about right now. Everything. Make yourself go to 100 and don't stop. And then go back and look at that list and sort things through. And I would suggest the same thing. What are the things that I have control over right now? What are the things that I'll have control over in a little while? And what do I just not have control over at all?
Absolutely.
And that can be a really interesting therapeutic writing tip as well.
I think it's really important to be kind to yourself, to realize that feeling overwhelmed, feeling numb, feeling despair are all very, very normal. And we will have the tendency, the little critics that live in our mind, of beating us up and saying, you shouldn't be feeling this, you shouldn't have despair, you shouldn't be feeling numb, you should be going into, just the whole list. And to try as much as possible to give yourself a little grace. These are unprecedented times. As one of my CFP friends said over the weekend, he said that this is the greatest time of uncertainty in my lifetime.
Right.
And it is. This is unprecedented. And it's like 100 years ago was the last time something like this happened in the United States.
Do we have a sense of, if I can ask you, if with your money, with your financial management, are there things that you should be doing right now? People want to know, if I have money in a savings account, should I take it out of the savings account? If I have money invested, do I need to do anything? Are there actions that we should take right now?
I think maybe the first action is to take a snapshot of where you're at financially.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us right now are okay. For today, we're okay.
And I love what you said about right now. And for even people who have lost their jobs, right now are you hungry?
Right now.
Right now, yes. Do you have a roof over your head? Let's deal with right now and acknowledge the reality of the right now. Okay, so take stock. What should you do soon?
Yes, so look at your income, look at your outgo. Draw some relief in the fact today you're okay. Many of us that are living off of portfolios have reserves or we have some cash, and we'll be okay for a few months. And so I think that's really important, is to not get too far into the future with horribleizing that, well, I'm going to lose everything that I've got.
Mm-hmm.
Markets will come back. It may not be soon, but markets will come back.
For people who are in debt,
probably the best thing to do is nothing.
For people who are in debt, Rick, do you stay on top of those debts now with the money that you do have, knowing that you lost your job? So you're paying off your credit card, or you're making minimum payments on your credit card. Do you need to keep paying those things at the expense of having the cash on hand, and sort of keep that, for people who aren't, who are a little bit tougher going into this situation?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Lori, I think that's really individual. One thing that I would do if you were concerned about making a payment versus having enough money to buy food is to contact the credit card company or whoever the lender is and ask them what leniency they may have. I'll guarantee you, everybody's going to have some leniency going through this time.
Right.
It really hasn't washed through the economy yet.
Yeah.
So I would just make that call and see what's possible.
South Dakota Attorney General's office is warning people about phishing scams, and businesses are ripe to become victims as standard protocols continue to change. To help us all spot some of these scams and give us some red flags we should all be watching out for, In the Moment host Lori Walsh was joined by the Better Business Bureau's Jesse Schmidt.
Jesse, welcome. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Lori. Glad to be back on here.
Unfortunately, we have to talk about this because people use this as an opportunity to take advantage, don't they?
Absolutely. Scammers know that so many more of us are home than ever before during these times. And again, there's never anything that is not ripe with opportunity. I said to somebody last week, every scam we've ever talked about over the last 5 years now has a COVID-19 response attached with it. So whether those are shopping scams, like you're looking to buy masks or some sort of protection device, gloves, any of that online. Just last week, we saw a half a dozen, if not more, websites pop up that claim to have these devices. And they're just shadow sites that you aren't going to get anything, but they are going to charge your credit card. Mm-hmm. And so, again, don't buy this sort of protective devices. We know that these need to be reserved for our medical staff. And so, again, don't jump into that or fall victim to that.
Right.
We're starting to see them focus attention on businesses. We always have talked about, you know, having the right protocols in place. This happens so quickly that businesses may not have had work from home standards set in place. So this is a great opportunity for scammers to send phishing emails to businesses and to individuals as well.
And everybody's, you know, those headlines that you look on, and you know, it's the Washington Post or it's NPR or it's, you know, someone that you normally might trust. You really got to look at those emails before you open them because the headline might be enticing. I saw one the other day that I won't even repeat because it was so wild, but I looked closely, didn't click on it, and realized, you know, there it was just waiting. It's COVID news. Click here.
They're
really kind of playing into our desire to know and our anxiety as well.
That's absolutely right. Scammers always like to get us off our game, and they do play into our insecurities. So who doesn't have some insecurity around all of this? Am I going to still be working? Where am I going to be working? Are we all going to have jobs? Are my kids going to be in school? What am I going to do with my kids? I mean, insecurities abound because of this most recent situation that we're in. So, yes, always hover up. You know, it may appear to look from you or look from me or from your boss, but just hover over the address, email address, and oftentimes those are masked as well. So you'll see where they're really leading you, and it's not from your boss. And we see these in South Dakota on a regular basis. They may add another S to my name. Jesse Schmidt's not an easy one to say anyway. So they put another S in there or something else. And so they copy everything so it looks just like me. And I would say to our finance person, hey, can you wire me a check or wire me some money to this account? I need to go purchase some new equipment so my employees can work from home. All seems very legitimate until we've never wired money before. Why wouldn't she just, you know, have me put it on my company card or that sort of thing? So, again, you just have to be all aware all the time, whether it relates to your work, your personal life, your email, your text messages. We're seeing these text messages start to flood inboxes. So yes, there's so much to talk about.
I've gotten a phone call from Medicare, which I'm not on.
Right.
And so that's one of them, right? People are making phone calls saying it's time to update your, you know, you're going to need health care. Let's update your policy.
Right. And really, none of us have a Medicare or a Medicaid policy. Right. You sign up for Medicare or Medicaid, and then it's available to you. There are no changes at this point in time to Medicare or Medicaid. So, again, it's like you say, you are easy to recognize. But if they go on then to threaten a senior saying, hey, your health care, you're not going to have health care if you don't respond to these text messages or phone calls or emails. Well, all that does, again, they get them off their game. They get them, you know, from a point of insecurity and fear, and that's when they're ripe. So We always say a couple of things. If you don't know who's calling you or texting you, do not answer the phone or do not text them back. And the other thing is you should never have to pay money to get money. You've never had to pay for Medicare before. You don't need to pay for it now. And don't let them, you know, lure you into thinking that, oh, they're going to change my Part D or they're going to drop that. None of that is going to happen right now.
Mm-hmm. As this moves forward, I know that the Congress did not agree on a relief package yet, but we can look to the possibility that there might be something in the future. And if checks are coming in the mail or checks are getting direct deposited, that we're going to see scammers all over that. What should people look out for?
We already are seeing that. I think scammers jumped the gun. I think they assumed that Congress was going to pass something last night, as so many of us were hoping. But we'll see something rather quickly. And 10 years ago, we referred to this as stimulus. I don't know what this is going to be called, but a relief action of some sort. Mm-hmm. And they're going to tell you that, you know what, we can get you your money tomorrow. We just need access to direct deposit into your bank account. So what are those numbers?
Right.
Well, that's not the case. You know, again, never, never give out that information to a caller over the telephone. That's, you know, you're just ripe for somebody to take advantage of you. Mm-hmm. And I would tell people, please reach out to your parents, your grandparents, and have these conversations with them. Say, you know what, as of now, there's nothing out there, right? Mm-hmm. There's some unemployment things out there, but you have to go to the site first. Nobody will initiate it towards you. So those are the things you need to just keep that flow of communication going. And those are the things we really want to communicate with our family members.
Would you also say it's a good time to make a plan about communicating when someone is sick? Because it seems to me with, you know, so much of this is, you know, you're in isolation and now you've been sent, you know, to the ER. And, you know, somebody could call and say, your grandchild is in this hospital in this state. We need you to send money for his money. So just how are you going to communicate the information within your family if somebody actually is ill so that you have a plan? It's still time to plan, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's never too late to put those plans together, especially if you might have somebody that's in not great health anyway,
right,
and has a little bit more compromised system. They are the type that are easy to fall victim to this and their family members. So, again, start up those group texts and tell people this is how we're going to be communicating. So it's not going to be an email string. Or whatever works for your family.
Right. Have your own thing.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, whatever's worked. We recently went through this in my own family. And again, we had a text that we were all a part of, so everybody knew every step of the way.
Yeah. Slow down. Don't fall for those outrageous claims about buy this and you can fight COVID-19. Talk to your family. Talk to your doctors. Do people report things to you, Jesse? Do you want reports of things to Better Business Bureau?
We absolutely do. Certainly, if you've lost money, we would encourage you to reach out to your local law enforcement. And then bbb.org/scam tracker, or just put scam tracker in there. That allows us to communicate to you on a regular basis what we're seeing across the country. And you'll see where these red hotbeds are of scams that are going on. And again, we are leveraging our media partners, and so we're grateful that you allow us to share the information that we're hearing. So, yes, give us a call. In South Dakota, that's 1-800-649-6814. We still have people answering the phones every day and ensure to everybody's safety. We want to, you know, not have people fall victim to scams and have all the resources available to them because they sure may need them.
That's this week's COVID-19 special. Thank you for joining us. If you're looking for an individual segment from our radio program, you can find all of our segments at listen.sdpb.org or by following the In the Moment segments podcast. And if you have a story idea, please send an email to inthemoment@sdpb.org. From Lori Walsh and the rest of the In the Moment team, I'm Josh Heyer. Thank you for listening.